This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. And we have so much we have to get to this hour. I don't even know how we're going to do it all. Medal of Honor Monday, of course, as it always is, coming up a couple minutes from now. We're going to talk about, okay, so all this communist violence, they're not going to stop. They want this to happen. Well, what do we do then? What can we do? We'll talk about that. We can do this. It's going to take some time, but we can do this. John Conrad is coming up 30 minutes from now, our global shipping expert, John Conrad. We're going to ask about how clogged up are things right now? What's good? What's bad? All that and so much more coming up on the world-famous Jesse Kelly Show. Do remember that if you missed any part of the show, including our first hour, you can download it iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Now, because it is the start of the second hour, before we get to any of those other things, we are going to honor a hero as we always do. It is time for Medal of Honor Monday, where we take somebody's Medal of Honor citation and we just read it. That's it. These are available for you. They're all free. They're all online. If you have internet access right now, you could go read every single one of them. And I would recommend you start chopping away at it because it's amazing. And we pick out ones we like. We do ones that you like. If you have one that you just like or you're related to it, you can always send us an email along with your love, hate, and death threats to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. This guy actually said, hey, Jesse, can you read the Medal of Honor citation for a Raymond Zussman? I think it's amazing how he was able to do so much with very little ammunition and men. Much thanks. And God bless. So what did Mr. Zussman do? Raymond Zussman of Hamtramck, Michigan. Let's find out, shall we?
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
On the 12th of September, 1944, Second Lieutenant Zussman was in command of two tanks operating with an infantry company in the attack on enemy forces occupying the town of Noroy-le-Bourg, France. At 7 o'clock p.m., his command tank bogged down. Throughout the ensuing action, armed with only a carbine, he reconnoitered alone on foot far in advance of his remaining tank in the infantry. Returning only from time to time to designate targets, he directed the action of the tank and turned over to the infantry the numerous German soldiers he had caused to surrender. He located a roadblock and directed his tanks to destroy it. Fully exposed to fire from enemy positions only 50 yards distant, he stood by his tank directing its fire. Three Germans were killed and eight surrendered. Again, he walked before his tank, leading it against an enemy-held group of houses, machine gun and small arms fire kicking up dust at his feet. The tank fire broke the resistance and 20 enemies surrendered. Going forward again, alone, he passed an enemy-occupied house from which Germans fired on him and threw grenades in his path. After a brief firefight, he signaled his tank to come up and fire on the house. 11 German soldiers were killed and 15 surrendered. Going on alone, he disappeared around a street corner. The fire of his carbine could be heard, and in a few minutes he reappeared, driving 30 prisoners before him. Under Second Lieutenant Zussman's heroic and inspiring leadership, 18 enemy soldiers were killed and 92 captured. Not a bad day, huh? Not a bad day. Now, let's get back to the task at hand. I don't want to live in this kind of country. political assassinations and violence all the time. I want the communists to stop. I want there to be peace. But how do we get that? Well, let me use a couple examples here. You remember our Rhodesian history segment. Don't forget, history's coming back May 4th. Our Rhodesian history segment. And we talked about how these communist groups were pouring into Rhodesia from the surrounding countries. Okay, you can arrest them, you can go out and kill them, and they did. But they just kept coming, and they just kept coming. Like there were endless amounts of them. What do you do? Why were they still coming? That's the best question. Why so many coming? Because they were funded and trained by large nation states like China and the Soviet Union. Nation states were funding and training all these communists. So the Rhodesians are killing them as fast as they can kill them, but there seems to be an inexhaustible supply of them. Okay? Pause on that for a moment. Let's talk about crime, drug dealing, if you will. Picture a major American city. There's some gangbanger on the block and he's selling crack. Not ideal, I think you would agree. Probably not great. Now, you want that to stop. Okay, but you go put handcuffs on that drug dealer and you throw him in jail, and the next day there's a different guy standing on the street corner with a bag of crack selling it. And you can arrest that guy and throw him in jail, but then the next day there's another guy on the street corner with a bag of crack selling it. What's going on here? Well, that guy standing on the street corner with a bag of crack, he doesn't have any actual power, really. Maybe he has a gun. I'm sure he's violent, probably stupid, but why is he actually there? He's there because in all likelihood, his gang of hoodlums who live on that block, they were hired by a middle management type in a large criminal organization. Could be the Italian mafia, cartel, mixture of the two. You see, some middle manager based here in America, he wants to move a lot more crack and make a lot more money through the streets of, let's call it, Chicago. So he goes and finds a bunch of young, stupid idiots and hands them bags of crack and says, I'll give you a little cut, go sell my crack. Okay, but even then, if you travel all the way up the chain to the middle management guy, what if you just throw handcuffs on him and send him? Well, then you have to climb further up the chain until you get to the man or the men who have the plan, and they're hiring the right people to carry out the plan. I'm Mr. Crime Lord, and my plan is to make a lot of money. How am I going to make money? I'm going to make crack. I'm going to make tons and tons of crack. And then I'm going to hire a bunch of violent, scummy losers to distribute my said crack. And eventually, enough money will be flowing up into my coffers that I'll be flying private jets and living in mansions all over the world. If you really want to stop the guy on the street corner with a bag of crack in his pocket, you don't just throw him in jail. You must go to the institutions who create people like him. You must go after the institutions. The poor Rhodesians were never going to win the Rhodesian Bush War once the American West cut them off from resources. Not because they weren't brave enough. They were so brave. Not because they weren't good fighters, they were amazing fighters. Not because they didn't have a great country and the right ideas, they had a wonderful country. They were always going to lose because it doesn't matter how many commie street animals you butcher out in the Rhodesian bush, the Soviet Union, the People's Republic of China, they will always find new recruits and write new checks and send a new group of 1,000 of them into your country to rape and terrorize and murder. Unless you can travel up that chain and get to the institutions who create the communists, all else is just noise. It is. All else, to be honest with you, it's cope. It's just a coping mechanism. That's all it is. You're trying to convince yourself that if we just arrest this street animal, you know what we should do? Maybe you've even said something violent in the past 24, 48 hours. I think we should try him tomorrow and then skin him alive on national television. Okay. I applaud your vigor. It wouldn't work. It just wouldn't work. Why wouldn't it work? Because America has institutions, some foreign funded, some domestic funded. They have communist run institutions. We, I should say, have communist run institutions in this country, and they produce another 1,000 assassins a year. Or I should say would be assassins. There's an assassin factory of institutions in this country. If the factory stays running, this will never stop. What's the biggest factory? We'll talk about that next. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about making your life as an employer, as a business owner, easier. Isn't insurance a huge pain? Over and over and over again, my dad would yell and scream about insurance. I swear insurance rules the world, he used to tell me. Having to deal with all these different insurance policies. Why do I have a bunch of different insurance people? Can't I just talk to one guy? Now you can. My dad never could. Now that SuperSure exists, you can. You see, you're overinsured in some areas, and you're underinsured in other areas because you have all these different policies you don't fully understand, and they give you some blanket coverage that it's not even based on your business. SuperSure will handle your policies, all your applications. One-stop shop, you deal with one person, one company, SuperSure handles it all. They'll get you the right insurance for your business, not some blanket insurance policy. I love businesses that make my life easier. Stop hassling with insurance. You never have to do that again because SuperSure is here to take the pain away. All your policies in one place. SuperSure.com/Jesse. SuperSure.com/Jesse. Paid for by SuperSure Insurance Agency, LLC, a licensed insurance agency.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Monday. We had Medal of Honor Monday. We're going to get to emails. We have John Conrad coming up 10 minutes from now. By the way, you can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Your love, your hate, your death threats. I am going to tackle your emails about everything from this shooting to other things. People have questions about the security. How could this have happened? And I'm going to lay that out. I'm going to lay out, frankly, what happened, because I can tell you exactly what happened. What were our failures? What were our successes? If we're failing, why are we failing? We're going to talk about that. And that is something very important to me, because as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I know it's ugly to think about, but this culture of assassination we live in, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. We have a lot of work to do to make it go away. And so our next guy, I'm assuming it's J.D. Vance, but who knows who it is. Our next guy is already in mortal danger. I told you a long time before that shot rang out in Butler that they were going to kill Donald Trump. I warned you that they were. And then he got shot in the head. By the grace of God, he turned his head at the right time. I told you it was coming. And I'm telling you right now, there is going to be a very credible assassination attempt on the Vice President of the United States over the next few years. There's no question. Certainly as he ramps up his run for the presidency, whether it'll be successful or not, gosh, I hope not. But it's coming. I guarantee you it's coming. Probably more than one. Now, I want that to stop. I want to go back to living in a normal country where communists don't kill the people they disagree with. So we have to go to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is the institutions. I'm going to read something for you. Credit to Rob Henderson. He's the one who pulled out the chart. Relative to Americans with high school education, Americans with graduate degrees are twice as likely to support political violence. More education equals higher support for political violence. And there's a chart here showing a staggering thing, something we talked about before. To break it down simply, the longer you spend on a college campus, the more violent, demonic, and communist you will become. If you just step foot on there for half a second, it probably won't be bad. You checked in and out for a year, maybe you get by. You go all the way to a bachelor's degree, getting dicey, hope you pack up your stuff and leave. You start sticking around for master's degrees and PhDs, you'll be Pol Pot before you know it. Here's a headline. Caltech, you know that's where this would-be assassin went. Caltech's probe into its racist past isn't working. This is an LA Times article that I will not go into. Caltech is supposed to be one of these engineering super schools. Very difficult to get into. This guy, this would-be assassin, probably had a very high IQ. And then he got into this prestigious school, Caltech? Why would a guy like this grab a shotgun and hop on the train from LA to drive clear to Washington, D.C., and now he is a man, I don't know exactly how old he is, but he is a man who will probably die in prison one day, old, wrinkled, no more California, no more freedom, no more sunny beaches, no more steak dinners, it's federal penitentiary time, pal, where you better shower with two eyes in the back of your head for the rest of your life. Why in the world? Why in the world would he do that? Why would he risk that? Because the university system in this country trains communist foot soldiers to kill people. It just does. We are going to have to start burning down the American university system. Legally, by the way, legally, I don't want you to do anything illegal. Please don't go physically burn anything down. We are going to have to start not just stripping all funding from these universities. We are going to have to start firing everybody and closing the doors. I'm not even close to kidding. If you want America to stop producing communist assassins, one of the key institutions, one of the key assassin factories in this country is America's university system. And we could go deeper than that because there is more than that. Of course, the media institution. We could, of course, go through K through 12 schools, even the companies who make the textbooks. All these things are extremely valid targets. But what we have to start prioritizing is the institutions themselves. It's not enough to shoot the plane out of the sky. What you need to do is get your butt down to the plane factory and bomb it to smithereens. Then it will stop producing the planes and you don't have to shoot them out of the sky. We are asking all these questions right now and we're asking the wrong ones. But if we get a new White House ballroom, it has bulletproof glass. Can we stop this in the future? I mean, I'm all for it. Build the ballroom, put in the bulletproof glass. But when you're at the place where you have to put heads of state behind bulletproof glass when they give a 20-minute speech at a college campus, that's not a healthy place. And the solution cannot be more bulletproof glass. You have to find a way to smash the communist movement into a fine powder. And you do that by the complete dismantling and destruction of communist universities in this country. We have to go after the institutions themselves. Throwing another street animal in prison is not near enough because there's another 10 of them waiting with weapons to kill you and me and whoever the next Republican nominee is. The institutions that produce them must be ground to powder. Period. We'll talk to John Conrad next.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse
USA!
Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. It's been an amazing Monday, and it's time to get smarter about shipping things because that's kind of a fairly important industry, which is being revealed more and more every day. We have blockades and everything else. I want to know what's happening out there. So joining me now, as he has many times before, John Conrad, Merchant Marine, Captain, author. Okay, John, shipping. We know that there's currently a blockade on the Strait of Hormuz. How is that affecting, or is it affecting, things worldwide on the high seas?
Well, you've always been ahead of this curve, inviting me on and guys like Ross Kennedy. I appreciate that. It's working its way through the system. It's not this apocalyptic. If you read the news in Europe, they say it's this apocalyptic problem. It hasn't been that. You know, shipping is very elastic. Things can move around. You can get new ships. But it is definitely putting a strain on the system. The bigger problem is going back to the port congestion crisis in 2020 after COVID, to the Panama Canal drought, to the Red Sea and the Houthis there, to now this. It's just increasing stress on the system. And this is all participating in global inflation. You know, if everything takes longer to get shipped, if you need more inventory, prices are going to go up. So I think that's the main effect.
Okay, pause. Sorry, I'm going to ask you a bunch of nerdy details because I want to get smarter tonight and then rub it in all my friends' faces. Panama Canal drought. One, why is this whole canal important anyway? Two, what drought? What are you talking about?
Well, the Panama Canal is the most important canal for the U.S. Navy because without the Panama Canal, we have half our fleet in Norfolk and half in San Diego. And if something, you know, war breaks out in China, you'd have to go all the way around Argentina or South Africa. South Africa has not been good friends lately. They've been inviting Chinese and Russian in. We have a better relationship with Argentina, but that's a lot of time to get the Navy all the way around there, and the weather's horrible. The drought was 2 years ago. They ran out of water. They built a second canal that's bigger next to the original canal, and it uses a lot of water. They collect the water in this lake, and then the water flushes out on each ship transit into the Pacific or Atlantic, depending on which way you're going. While there's a limited amount of water, if it doesn't rain, you can't transit. So they had to limit the transits going through. This led all the way up to the beginning of the administration. Rubio and Pete Hegseth went down there and, you know, tried to negotiate this, you know, favorable terms, saying, hey, the U.S. needs to be able to secure it. We want free transit for U.S. flag vessels and a few other priorities for U.S. ships, because when there's a drought, they start auctioning off. And there's some indication that they've allowed us to have some security forces down there. Oh, and kicking the Chinese out of the port. They own the two ports. But the other ones have kind of stalled. They're still charging U.S. ships.
Okay, so let's go back over to the Strait of Hormuz before we talk about some shakeups in the Navy and things like that. People are confused about how we can wipe their Navy off the high seas with such ease, and yet things are not flowing. What is happening and why?
Well, I, at the very beginning, was very anti-war. I think a lot of us were anti-war, and there were some initial casualties. But if, you know, to get to this point where we are now, I was anticipating 2,000 casualties. We haven't come close to that number. And now what we see is the president doesn't want any more casualties. Pete Hegseth doesn't want any more. The Navy doesn't want any more. So we're starting to, you know, we just sent some two destroyers in for the first time last week. We're starting to do a little bit of mine clearing. But they're taking their sweet time, Jesse, and they're taking their sweet time because Iran can't be trusted, and we have our own oil. We use some oil from the Middle East, but it's not critical to us like it is in Europe. So they don't want to put the Navy, Marines, Army in harm's way. They'd rather take their time and do this slowly.
Okay, so you said in harm's way. For the normal person who doesn't understand this, what could harm us? At least our Navy ships, we wiped their Air Force out. We wiped out their Navy. What can hurt us that Iran has?
You're right. We did a fantastic job operationally. But it's an insurgency, right? So the Strait of Hormuz is a big U, and one side of that U is Iran. And there are a lot of places that you could hide drones, hide missiles, hide these speedboats. We see them, you know, launching these Boston Whalers, and you could put some mines in it. There already might be mines in the Strait of Hormuz. So the real way that you would secure a strait like that, and say this was a war against China and you absolutely had to secure the strait, is you would send Marines, boots on the ground, maybe not a long-term mission like months, but you would at least surge them in for a week or two in order to check the basements and clear out the Jones and destroy the Boston Whalers. We don't even seem willing to do that. So we're taking a very cautious approach here.
Okay, so we're taking a cautious approach. I understand that the Trump administration doesn't want soldiers to die, certainly doesn't want more bad headlines. I understand all that. But that clearly is going to extend the timeline somewhat, correct? I mean, I realize Iran is hurting, but go ahead, please.
It's extending the timeline significantly. We probably could have, you know, some ships were going through because Iran was charging them. This toll a few weeks ago, that has gone down because we've instituted a blockade. We've told people you can't pay Iran to go through. Iran cleared, doesn't have mines on their side, so they were allowing this. And we've put an end to that. So we're kind of in a stalemate now. Iran says they're blockading friendly ships, and the U.S. is blockading ships that could be transporting missiles or other cargo oil that benefits Iran. We're allowing humanitarian supplies through, but not oil or dangerous goods.
Okay, and you don't see an economic problem coming yet? I know you indicated that we could be in store for one, but as of now, we're holding okay.
Well, we're holding okay. Europe's in bigger trouble. They're running out of jet fuel. We've seen shortages in Australia, Korea. Other places are having this problem. Price of oil, because California, Gavin Newsom, shut down so many refineries, the oil goes from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to South Korea and then gets brought back to California to supply the cars. Well, because all the ships are moving around trying to get oil from other places, we don't have extra tankers. So to get that tanker, you got to spend a lot more money. So the price of gasoline, I was just in California, it was like $7.60 for a gallon of diesel. And that diesel costs, you know, all farmers, all contractors, anyone running a generator. So there are costs, but the acute cost is on our allies. It's on Europe. And Europe could send minesweepers themselves. They don't want to send the minesweepers. So we're in this kind of stalemate here. Trump saying, hey, if you want this goods, because you could run out of jet fuel before the big travel season in the summer, you know, you need to help here. And Europe saying, well, we didn't start this war. We don't want to help. And that's part of the stalemate.
John, do you have time to do just a couple more questions, another segment with me real quick? I want to ask you about a couple other things.
I always got to have time for you, Jesse.
My man. All right, we are going to be right back with John Conrad. I want to ask about the new Navy Secretary, shakeups going on, shipbuilding, other questions. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday. Remember, you can email us your love, your hate, your death threats, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Back with our favorite merchant marine in history, Captain John Conrad. Okay, John, we got news. It would be just political nerds, but we got news that there's been a shakeup in the Navy, the big cheese, and no one really understood why. What's going on?
Well, John Feeling came in as Secretary of the Navy. That's the top civilian in the Navy and has a lot of control over what the Navy's doing. And he had a chief of staff named John Harrison, who was a real go-getter. He kind of looked at Nimitz and King in World War II and said, hey, we got to really break some heads here. And that caused a lot of stress in the Navy. So Harrison was pushed out in October, and John Phelan's kind of been moving along the ball that John Harrison plays, a major reorganization of the Navy, all of these things. But the president's priority has been shipbuilding. And the Secretary of the Navy, has been doing a good job. You know, he got us the Golden Fleet. He's getting us new frigates. He's getting us a battleship. He's got a 50% increase in shipbuilding. He's fixed a lot of the budgetary problems in the Navy. This guy's a billionaire. He's friends with Trump. He has the mansion right next to Mar-a-Lago. Very successful businessman. He's cleaned out a lot of that, and he did it in the first year. But John Phelan is not a guy who gets on media. He won't get on the Jesse Kelly show. He won't do videos. And then in the shipbuilding world, this is, you can't build a stealth jet like you can in the Air Force and Skunk Works. You have to get the unions together. You got to get the shipyards. You got to get Wall Street excited. You got to get the people excited to call their congressman and want to put all this money. Shipbuilding is expensive. And, you know, he did all of these reforms, and a lot of them were good. But then the air kind of came out of the tires of the whole thing. And, you know, this Navy conference I was at last week, last year it was brimming with excitement. It was full house. They sold out of tickets. This year it was kind of boring. And people were like, I don't know if this is actually getting through. So the president let John Phelan go, brought in Hung Cao, who's great on video. He has one of the most popular videos on X, you know, when he was running for Senate, just railing against communism. He was born in Vietnam right before it fell, and, you know, a real success story, and became a Navy EOD, a Navy captain. He's an expert with mines, because that's what EODs do. And he's now in. He's already released two videos. He's already walked back some of the structural change, and I think he's going to, you know, infuse some enthusiasm in the shipbuilding.
Okay, the shipbuilding, you reference that all the time. I know it's near and dear to your heart, and you've referenced the problems we have with it before. Can you tell me, is it getting better? Because I know that's something Trump's hot on. It's something he stresses, that China can do it and we cannot. Are we getting better, and why?
Well, we will, even if everything Trump goes through, we won't approach China. China has 400 times the shipbuilding capacity we do. We're not trying to compete with China, but we built zero merchant ships last year. And our Navy ships, the newest carrier, is 17 years overdue. We've been building it for 17 years, Jesse. So we want to get some action. What I tell people is, this last year, I have been the most excited I've been in my 30-year career at sea. But then I become the most depressed I've ever been in my 30-year career. So we're flip-flopping between, hey, here's an amazing Trump executive action, and then, you know, all the players, the Navy, Maritime Administration dropped the ball. Here's a maritime action plan. Here's a new Secretary of Navy who redoes this, and then they don't follow through with the video and the podcast and really selling it to the American public. So we're flip-flopping some really good structural things, but you know, excitement's dying. And if we don't get some traction before midterms, you know, the next 2 years is just going to be the Democrats fighting us. So now's the time. Now's the chance to get it done. And I think bringing Hung Cao, someone who's out there, who's verbal, who knows this is a priority, I think this is the last Hail Mary to get this done, because we're not getting actual traction. A lot of money, a lot of structure, but we're not actually building ships yet.
John, how has our Navy performed with this whole Iran thing? Obviously, I know we're dominant, much better than they are technologically, every possible way. I understand all that. But are there things that happened or didn't happen that raised some concern for you?
Yeah, the number one thing is, we got the best Navy in the world. These guys are really good, Jesse, but they don't have enough destroyers. They don't have enough oilers. They don't have enough cargo ships to resupply these carriers and stuff at sea. But the problem is, and the problem has been for two decades, is when we're in a pinch, when Americans, you know, backs are against the wall, we figure out a way to get it done. We figure out a way that may not be ideal. We may have to get out some duct tape and some super glue, but we're going to get that done. And the problem is, when you get it done, then Congress says, well, you got it done last time. Why do you need more ships? And, you know, the problems keep mounting up. So there were a lot of problems with the Iran thing, but the Navy found, you know, kind of jerry-rigged around them. So we didn't really see those problems. But now we got three carriers in the Persian Gulf. One of them has been the second longest deployment in U.S. Navy history for a ship. So these guys are tired. They're overworked. And now when these ships go back, you know, a lot breaks when you push the envelope like this. And it just kind of gunks up the whole system, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. It does. Where do we repair our ships now? Just back at home, or is there some other place we can dock them and fix them?
We just opened up, allowed Korea and I think in Japan, letting them repair our ships. It used to be just in the United States. You know, the Navy used to build their own ships. The Brooklyn Navy Yard built our battleships. That was owned by the government, operated by the government, and there were these public shipyards. Philly, there was one in Hawaii, one in Washington. We changed that now. So all our ships are built by private or you know, some of the companies issue stocks. They're built by private defense contractors. But the Navy retained three yards that do repairs. So the okay. warships are at our three public shipyards, Norfolk, Washington, I believe, and Hawaii. And then we have a few Dayton's and Alabama shipyard that repair kind of our oilers and our auxiliary ships right now.
Okay. John, you are a wealth of information, buddy. John Conrad, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you for having me.
I feel like my tea levels just went up when I listened to that. All that talk about battleships and destroyers and mines. I mean, maybe it has more to do with the male vitality stack from chalk that's flowing through my veins than it does actual Navy talk. But still, tell me that wasn't sweet. You know what? Maybe we should name our next battleship the USS Chalk. What do you think about that, Chris? Natural herbal supplements. Whether you are a woman, they got female vitality stacks for you. Or if you're a man looking for a 20% boost in your testosterone in 90 days, do it naturally. I know there's a low T clinic on every corner in your town because we're drinking estrogen and we're becoming feminized and weak and pathetic. Let Chalk turn it around for you naturally, not with a needle in your arm. C-H-O-Q. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse. You're about to feel a whole lot better. All right. We have an entire final hour. We're going to talk about Democrat fraud. I'm going to carve through. You have a bunch of different emails with a bunch of different takes on different things. We'll tackle a bunch of those too. Hang on.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.